chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm delighted to have John Meister on the show today. John is the CIO at Panera Bread. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. So, John Meister, I have been looking forward so much to this time with you. I just appreciate you taking the time to be on the Something Extra podcast today.
I appreciate you asking me, Lisa. It's such an honor to be on this podcast. So many great episodes. I'm not sure how I rank with all the other ones that the fantastic sessions you've had. But I'm very honored to be asked to do it.
Yeah. Well, you're up there with me, you know, on top leaders. So, you know, you and I have actually fortunately known each other for a long time.
Quite a while. Yeah.
We've been,
because I'm old. You're not, but I am. So it's been a while.
Hey, listen, I've got a birthday next week. I'm getting older, that's for sure. Yeah, I'm getting older.
Gotta get those things up, right?
I know, exactly. No, I'm just grateful. Have another trip around the sun. But yeah, I mean, we've been blessed. Technology Partners has been blessed to be a partner of MasterCard, which we're going to talk about. Yeah. You were there for 14 or 15 years and now Panera. And so just very blessed to have known you for so long. But John, tell us a little bit about growing up. I don't know that you and I have ever talked about that.
Yeah, I don't talk about it too much, I guess. We moved around a lot when I was young. Actually, the first time I went to school, the same school 2 years in a row, was junior high. So I was always the new kid. But by the time I was at junior high, we settled in Wyoming. So I grew up in the Wild West. Still love the mountains. Still miss seeing them out my window every day. Did a lot of outdoor activities, fly fishing, hunting, four-wheel drive, going out in the middle of the country and having a bonfire with friends, doing all those things, riding a horse, doing all of that type of activity. So that's really what shaped me, I think. The other thing that shaped me about Wyoming, it's a very wealthy state with so much energy coming out of that. So every school had, even back in the Stone Ages, we had computers and computer labs. And so by the time I graduated high school, I knew 4 or 5 programming languages: COBOL, Pascal, C, BASIC, all Fortran, all of these languages I knew before I even went to college. And in those days, that was unheard of.
That is incredible. Well, I was going to ask you what kinds of things you like to do as a child, because they say a lot of times the things that you do as a child will come into play later. I mean, psychologists say that, like, if your child builds with Legos, they're going to want to create, you know, and do things like that. So, but this was through your school.
Yes, that's right. And I was lucky. We had, you know, back then, if you had a friend that had a Vic computer or a Tandy computer, everyone would, you know, come over and use that. And we had lots of access to those things in the school district. You could use them after hours, even during the summers. And so, you know, I fell in love with programming. You know, you lose track of time doing those things, but it was solving problems. And so back then, you know, we didn't really think of computer science as a degree. You went to engineering school. So I went to Rose Holman in Indiana. The biggest reason I chose Rose, it's a great school, small school, but it wasn't close to any mountains. And I knew if I was close to mountains, I'd be snow skiing. rather than focusing on my homework. So I went to Indiana in the middle of all the cornfields, found a fantastic engineering school, and then did all my snow skiing on the winter breaks.
That is so interesting. Boy, you were an old soul when you were young. Seriously, yeah, I mean, really, kind of self-awareness to go, you know, if I'm in the mountains, I'm going to want to be snowboarding. I'm going to want to be mountain climbing. I'm going to want to be doing all those things. So that is really fantastic. I remember when our middle daughter, Paige, when we were looking at colleges, because our son was out in Hollywood for a while. So she thought she wanted to go out there. And we visited Point Loma in San Diego. And where the lecture halls overlooked the ocean. And she deselected because she's like, you know what? I just am very about ideation and stuff. She said, I can just see me sitting here and like staring out at the ocean. So that is really awesome that you had that kind of self-awareness. But I know, so that's, I love that you fell in love with programming. You fell in love with computers at a very young age. And who would have ever thought, John, it's one of the best careers a young person can pick
today. No one knew back in those days, right? No one knew.
No one knew.
No one did it. Even, so I was an electrical engineer. Even as we did all of our labs, we worked in teams. One of my best friends coming through college was my lab partner. He was really good at building circuits. I was not. I was really good at programming circuits and doing assembler code and figuring out the logic for it. So we made a great pair. But coming out of college, I knew I wanted to code. And no one coded in those days, right? It was a bunch of guys who had spent their life doing it, were a little curmudgeon-y and not like me whatsoever, but it was fun, right? I learned a tremendous amount from them. Mm-hmm. Even my summer jobs were doing programming or data science jobs, doing anything on computer systems, organizing databases, creating databases, doing all of that type of stuff. So it was,
I had
very little idea. Yeah, I had very little idea what I was doing. Very little idea what I was doing, but I would just roll up my sleeves and okay, let's, you know, find a manual. Let's figure this out. I think he was honestly pretty impressed with my tenacity. I think he deeply seated that in me. Anyway, you know, 80% of the work is done by 20% of the people. He used to say that all the time. Mm-hmm. You show up early, you're the last one to leave, and you work harder. So I think he saw that. It made me happy to work that hard doing these things. And so I think he knew I was going to be successful at some point. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I ever imagined being this successful, but that's, I think, some luck, some tenacity, some hard work, and being surrounded by great teams and great mentors and those type of things.
It all plays into it, doesn't it, John?
Yes,
it all plays into it. Because you can have the natural ability, but not have the discipline or the work ethic.
That's right.
Or not be put in the, you know, an ideal situation. But I know your dad, because we talked about it offline. You said he would feed you books and, you know, I love that he was even teaching you the Pareto principle, you know, back then.
That's right.
But great mentor.
In high school, he took me to Dale Carnegie. I read all the Dale Carnegie books. I came out very well prepared. But it was my parents, it was a great dynamic because my father was very demanding on working hard. My mother was all the soft skills and emotional intelligence and doing all those type of things. And I learned a lot from both of them. It was tremendous. Mm-hmm.
What
and I owe my success to both of them. Yeah.
What a blessing, John. What a blessing. We could probably do a whole podcast on that because
probably,
I know you along with me, you know, I've had a heart for children and kids that don't have that kind of support system, right? And
absolutely.
I know you do too. But I think you started your career at Accenture, then spent 15 years at MasterCard, at least five different roles, maybe more. You eventually became the group executive for MasterCard, but now you're the CIO for Panera and you have done such incredible work there. In fact, John, not to embarrass you, but you were an Orbie winner in 2021. And for our listeners that don't know what this is, a very, very high honor and award that's given to a CIO. But the deal is that you are voted on and judged by your peers, CIOs, which is really incredible.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I really feel that it's a team award. And I think the Panera IT team won that award. A CIO can do anything they want to for success, but none of that matters unless there's a team. And I really, truly believe, had several CIO awards through the years. And I really, truly believe it is because of the team that we have. It is not about the CIO.
Yeah.
But I appreciate the recognition.
We're going to talk about that because, yeah, we'll talk about that in a little bit. Because I tell you, I've not talked to a person, John, that's worked under you or with you that does not have amazing things to say about your leadership. You know, so it does start with that, but it is the team. You cannot accomplish anything on your own, that's for sure. But I wanted to kind of get into this a little bit. This is kind of fun. I wanted just to talk about a few fun facts about Panera. So I know Panera was started in the 80s by a couple of guys, right?
Ken Rosenthal really started St. Louis Bread Company. Ron Shake came in and bought St. Louis Bread Company. A few years later, turned it into Panera. I'm not sure that St. Louis had its, you know, world renowned for sourdough. So if you're sitting in the city of Chicago, you might think, St. Louis Bread Company, I don't understand. You know, St. Louis doesn't seem to be famous for bread. So it was changed to Panera. But along the way, it's been a very innovative company, right? I can remember the day all of us technology people would go to Starbucks and pay $2 for 30 minutes of Wi-Fi. And Panera came through and said, no, it's free. And all of us changed behaviors and went to Panera for free Wi-Fi. And now I think about it, right? That's an expectation of everyone. Free Wi-Fi is practically everywhere. That was not the case. You know, I think about putting calorie information on the menus. You know, that had to be legislated for restaurants to do that.
Panera had been doing it for years. I think you were one of the first.
Yeah,
Panera was one of the first to put the calories on there.
And I remember all these CIOs calling and saying, how did you overcome that problem? And I've been doing this job for 10 years. And I said, quite simply, it was done long before me. So to us, it's second nature now. Antibiotic free. The thought was, yeah, it's harder to source that. But it's the best thing for humankind, right? The sooner we ramp down this rampant use of antibiotics and the proteins we eat, the easier it will be to avoid these superbugs that are resilient to antibiotics. And so it was making a difference in the world. The company aligns to your values as a human as well. All voices are welcome. Everyone should be heard and respected. You have warmth for guests. It's about serving others. And so the whole thing more or less aligns to your values. It becomes very easy to work here.
Yeah, I just love it. It's one of my go-tos. I've told you that every time you and I are together, you will even like give me, hey, Lisa, have you tried this? Because you guys are constantly innovating in your food as well. But what people might not know is that Panera means bread bowl. Which I think is really cool. I mean, you guys, and just the breaking of bread, you know, there's just something really special about that. So here's what I think. I think you guys have convened and made it very easy. You know, the customer experience is incredible, probably bar none. And then creating the community. People love just to go there and just, they see people that they know and that sort of thing. I also love this. I learned this at some locations, John, you don't have to pay. Because you had the Panera Cares.
Yeah. So we did the Panera Cares. It was pay what you can. And the thought was is that some people who can't afford it can't pay. That's fine. Others can pay more and would pay it forward. And those locations have worked fabulously for a long time. I think the other one that's great is we do this day-in donation, right? So if we have everything's fresh made, all the bread is baked fresh every day in the cafes. I don't know that most people realize that. But at the end of the day, we have those leftovers and, you know, some of them would be fine to sell the next day, but that's not what we're about. It's about those who are food insecure, right? Insecure about where they're going to have the next meal. And we donate all those leftovers every night. We have wonderful organizations that will come around and collect those and then take them to food banks. And it's a huge effort to manage that on a national level, right? But right thing to do. So we have a couple of fabulous people that run that program.
I love that. Well, and I love what you said. You know, you could sell day old bread, you know, or take day old bread, but no, you're giving your best to those people. So I love that. Well, you guys, I don't even know how many times you've earned the number one spot, John, for the most innovation, you know, and foods. But I know that it's been many times and it's not just limited to the clean ingredients. I mean,
that's right.
It truly is the experience, right?
That's right. So a very innovative company. We have a relentless, maniacal focus on the customer experience. we think in, you know, the minute detail of that customer experience. That's how we built this digital capability. That's really what I came in to help build. I saw that the vision. I remember thinking as a customer, drive home from work from MasterCard, I'd have about a 50-minute commute. And I'd call my wife and I could hear in her voice the fact that my kids were driving her absolutely crazy. Okay, I'll pick up dinner, right? And I'd ask where they want to go and they would all take a vote, right? And Panera would win almost every time. And I dreaded that answer because that meant I had to go there. I had to place an order. I'd forget to customize my daughter's salad or my wife's salad and I'd bring it home or we might be missing an item or something, right? But I had to wait in line to place the order. I had to wait in line for the food to be produced. And so really the vision was accuracy issues. Sometimes I don't remember to say the customization. Sometimes the cashier doesn't hear what I say. Sometimes the cashier enters that wrong. All of that's taken out of the equation. If I'm ordering the same thing, it's my quick favorite order and it's from my favorite cafe and I'll pick it up at this time. I knew exactly when I was going to be there. And so we tried to take all of that use case. And the reality was, in my mind, it was, I'm coming home. I want to get home as fast as possible, help my wife with the kids. And if I could do this trip in 30 seconds or less, stopping at Panera and picking up my food and then getting home with it, that was success. And our founder for a long time would order breakfast every morning, same order, and he would stop at a stoplight. His son would go out, get into the restaurant and get the order and come back out. If he made it back in the car before that stoplight changed, I had a good day. If he didn't, I got to hear exactly what the issues were. And he was smart, even though it was the same order, it was not an order you could make ahead. So it was an unexpected time every morning, but having that relentless focus, it was fantastic. And some people might look at that as you're getting all that pressure from the CEO every day. That's not a great experience. I flip that to, I have his undivided attention when it comes to this stuff. That's fantastic, right? I have access to his expertise and his thinking, yes, and his opinions. And he really spent a lot of time with us going through this. And I think ultimately that was one of our secrets of success.
Well, he was all in. He was all in, and it, you know, I mean, with him doing that every day, John, you knew how important it was to him. You know, it wasn't something that he said, you know, it was just not an aspiration, but it's like, no, let's make this happen. Well, I have got so much more to talk to you about, but we do need to take a quick break and we'll be right back with John Meister on the Something Extra podcast.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
John, welcome back to the Something Extra podcast, everyone. John, we were just talking about this digital transformation that you took Panera on. I mean, I think you called it Panera 2.0. I remember, John, after you had taken the role at Panera, I was probably in your office maybe a year after that, or 6 months after you took the role. And there was you probably don't remember this, there was a book on the corner about digital transformation.
Oh, yes.
And boy, did you take them through some things. I mean, I know that you did a lot technology-wise, but was it a changing of mindset too?
Yeah, absolutely. So Panera has this track record of innovation, this process of being maniacally focused on the customer experience. It was a little bit of a transformation for everyone to see the future. But because the CEO is fully committed, the founder's, you know, CEO is fully committed, everyone has no choice but to be fully committed. So it's a relentless desire to improve, improve, improve. And even though we had some problems in our early stages, we would see through that. And we didn't quite know how we were going to get everything accomplished. But that was, you know, here's what we're doing the next month to get that accomplished. I think the entire organization came back with a new way of thinking, right? Iterative approaches. It doesn't have to be perfect from day one. Instead, we're going to put it out there. We're going to use it ourselves. We're going to watch what our customers do in the cafe. We were spending a lot of time in the cafes, and most of the technology people loved that opportunity because you could see what you were doing, how it made a difference every single day. And you'd get that feedback and you'd come back with a whole tablet full of ideas of, you know, we got to fix this, we have to fix this, we have to fix this. And it was a relentless focus. And just doing that over and over and over really, I think, produced powerful results. But it was pushing into a very tight focus and then an ever-improving mindset.
Yeah, that's what I've seen with you guys. It's just continuous improvement. I mean, you don't stop. I mean, it's always continuing. How do you get more efficient? How do you do these things? So I just love that. Well, I told you, like, culture wise. So that's a big part of your culture, I believe, is just this continual relentless focus on innovation and continuous improvement. I told you offline that I just had Mark Miller on the podcast, and Mark's got a book coming out called Culture Rules. And we're excited about this book that's coming out in April. How have you, John, as the leader, because obviously the organization has culture, but you have created this kind of culture within the IT organization too. I remember talking to somebody years ago, I don't know if you guys still do this or not, but you guys would have internal hackathons.
Oh yeah, we still do.
Do you still do that?
Yes, we do. We actually have hackathons internally with our employees once a year. We're actually getting ready to do our first food hackathon, where everyone gets to play around with all the ingredients and come up with new ideas for the culinary team. And from the technology side of things, we start now with business problems. So we work with each of our business partners and say, you know, give us your worst problems that are the most annoying things we have to deal with. And then we have a whole set of those that we publish. And then the hackathon actually isn't just the technology team anymore. We started out as just the technology team for a few years, but now we'll partner with different business teams. And we come back to try and find these solutions that are tackling real world problems. And then the top three ideas get awards. We take some seed money actually and try and build some of these things out. But it's amazing what the teams can produce in 48 hours. And at the same time, for years, it was just the technology people judging these. The CEO comes in to watch this, watch all these final presentations, participates in the judging. It's such a powerful and uplifting experience, and you're so inspired when you come out of it. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, and it's created so much, you know, I mean, here's what I always say, John, is companies need to be thinking about their culture, because it's hard to find good people. And when you find them, you want to attract them, but you also want to engage them and keep them, right? And so you're creating something that's really a talent magnet, you know, so that you can get the best talent, which is really, I think, really powerful.
We even bring in outside experts, right? So it's very typical that Apple or Google or Amazon, Microsoft will have participants here with us or experts on hand. So even if a technology team needs to do something very quickly using a new tool, Google Cloud or Amazon, you know, any of those type of things, it's like, we have someone here to help teach you that and very quickly stand something up. So it's a very memorable couple of days from a learning standpoint. You're exhausted at the end of it, but and so inspired and attached with your team, right? It's a very cohesive contest. So it's good.
So good. So good. Well, what, I mean, okay, let me ask you this question. So you are definitely customer centric. We talked about that at the very beginning. I mean, it's obsession with the customer, but you're also employee centric. John, in your mind, which one comes first, or are they concentric circles?
They are concentric circles. If we don't take care of our employees don't take care of our guests. And we think of restaurant general managers as our number one leaders in the company, because they take care of the people in the restaurant. And so we really, truly believe they are the most important leaders across the company. If you have a GM that's very good at managing and leading and inspiring cafe staff, you see the highest customer satisfaction scores. When you see the highest customer satisfaction scores, you see a correlation of the most frequent customer interactions, right, in sales. And we see this correlation play out. And so for us, it truly is all about our employees. And how do we, as the technology organization, I used to say it this way all the time. When we screw something up, and in technology, we always screw stuff up, right? It's very hard to be perfect 365 days a year. When we screw something up, it makes that GM's job really hard, or it makes our associate's job really hard, or the customer's really mad. and they yell at these associates or GMs, right? So they're taking all the heat on our behalf. So we really try and do whatever we can to reduce the friction for the employees as well as the customers. It is really, in my mind, differentiating as a technology organization when you take that principle.
Very good. Very good. Well, I told you, I want to talk a little bit about John and your personal leadership. Okay, style. I know that you're a learner too. We've already talked about reading. Mm-hmm. Love to know what you're reading right now. But first of all, I'm going to ask you, the people, I've talked to so many people and they're very complimentary of you. I mean, what would you say, you know, your leadership style is, John? And I mean, I'm sure your dad influenced you, but I mean, I'm sure you've had mentors along the way too, probably at Accenture and MasterCard. And, you know, what did you learn from them? How did they inform how you lead today?
I have a couple of philosophies I try and maintain. Gratitude, right? So thanking people for a job well done. And if you're always on the improving side of it, it's very easy to make it feel like you're never satisfied with the work that's being produced. So you have to bend over backwards a little bit to make sure that's not what we feel. We're not satisfied, but we're, you know, we still have gratitude for the progress we're making. You have to surf that line a little bit. Mood is contagious, right? So we have to have some humor and a optimistic outlook, right? It doesn't matter how big the problem is and how difficult we think it is. We're smart. We'll figure it out. We'll get through it. 90% of the time, we're getting through it faster than anyone else as well. And we take pride in that. The technology organization tries to make this a huge enterprise operate at the speed of a startup, or kind of our mantra. And as a result, right, no problem's too big. So you think about big picture, you have an optimistic output, and you get after it, right? So we have to, there's a few things about that. We build resilience. I tell everyone that's the least fun muscle to build. If you think about working out, right, there's always that exercise you hate to do. Resilience is the worst thing to build because it means you have to go through some crisis. And usually that crisis is your fault.
It makes it worse.
That's right. That's right. But if you, as you resolve that crisis and you get through it on the other side and you reflect, you know, it's easy to blame everyone else for those problems. The real way to get through this and build resiliency is, even if the crisis was caused by something else, but think about my role. How could have I played my cards differently to avoid that crisis? And as you start to absorb those things, that's truly how you build resilience. At the same time, you have to feel some safety in having failure. And that's the other one I tried to establish, right? IT is going to have problems. We are going to have stupid human errors. We're going to uncover technology bugs that no one else in the world realized was there in some technology. And they cause annoying problems or catastrophic problems. All those things will happen. It's a very complex world. It's how you react to those problems that really measures your value system. You can state all of these things, right? You truly want to measure yourself as a person. Deal with the problems and chase them face on, right? So.
That is so good. Well, I knew that about you. You and I have a mutual, really dear friend, Dan Roberts, and he always says one of your isms is about the resilience. And goodness knows we need resilience in both our personal lives as well our businesses, right? It's just, it's critical. I found another one of your isms, and I wanted to, I'm going to point out my own ism for John Meister. You call it owning the moment.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Expand on what you mean by that.
So most people that work with me will know that I have a very high level of ownership. You know, if there's a challenge, we're going to own it and face off with it and go with it. When you look at those moments of challenges and you feel down about it, you have to reflect on your own ownership of it. Like I said, it's easy to blame someone else, right? When there's a problem. It's so easy to do that. It's human nature. That's not how you grow, though. How you grow is, I own it, and what could I do differently? And you're going to come away with that actually having a little bit more happiness in life as well, right? I understand how I could have done things differently. I'm able to get past that. It's not going to be something I keep in my brain and I have resentments for or anything like that. You truly own your part of it. Look for your own responsibility in that moment. and rise above it, right? How could I have done differently? I'll learn next time. Forgive yourself a little bit. Move on.
Yeah, that's so good. Yeah, and that's truly, I mean, the learning happens, unfortunately. I mean, the learning does happen in the failures and in the,
that's right.
You know, the challenges, right? That's really where you do learn. And, you know, my thing is don't just like blow past it, because you can just blow past it and not really gather the learnings.
That's right. John, that's absolutely, you know, right.
So yeah. I want to ask you a couple of technology type questions here. So what emerging AI, artificial intelligence applications, can we expect to see in the coming months from Panera? Are you guys doing much with AI right now?
We are testing an AI drive-through ordering capability. And so you're speaking to, you know, an AI bot when you're going through the drive-thru. We're finding that takes a little bit of the edge off and labor for the cafes, obviously. Mm-hmm. The other one is, you know, I may ask you different things as a cashier, right? But we have to leave that scripted. And if the cashier's just had a pretty harsh customer interaction, their heart may not be in it, or it's hard to upsell things, or remembering to ask all the questions, or, you know, you sure you don't want a coffee this morning type of thing? Not quite in that fashion. They're much better at this than I am, obviously. But the AI, right? If you think about it from a sales perspective, you deal with 1,000 rejections before you get the yes. The AI is not impacted by that.
Right.
So it will ask those
feelings. They're not going to get hurt.
That's right. Its feelings do not get hurt. And so as we're continuing to play with that, as we get the accuracy higher and higher, we'll start to expand it. And so I think you will see some more of those type of things. And we've had, it's funny, we didn't know it at the time, but we've had a few people in the press go through and do that experience and record it and write a review of it. And all of those feedback moments were very positive. So that's fantastic.
That's right? Wonderful.
I actually was a little nervous starting to read the article thinking, oh, this could go bad, right? But they actually said this is the way they would prefer to have it work more often. And that's... okay, that's fantastic feedback for us, right?
That means we're on the right track. It's exciting. Yeah, you're on the right track. You know, it kind of affirms that, right?
Yeah.
That's so awesome. Well, I want to ask you one question before you talk about something extra. So you guys, you know, we launched a technology leadership experience at the beginning of 2019.
Yes.
Beginning of 2019, you guys literally were one of the very first companies to put your name in the hat. And you hosted us at Baguette University.
It was here at Panera. That's right.
It was. And, you know, so in your mind, and this is really where we are preparing high potential IT leaders take that next level.
Right.
I mean, what have you seen? I mean, you've had a lot of people go through that program now.
Yep.
I mean, what would you say are the major benefits? What have you seen that's been really good about that program?
Well, I would say the program's getting better and better as well. The graduates now come back with a thesis project and how do I apply what I've learned to a real-world problem in my current situation? Most of our leaders that go through that understand there's a couple of things, right? Here's contacts that I have from other companies outside my own that I can call and bounce things off of. I think that's very powerful. I try to go to dinner once a week with someone not of my company that we can bounce ideas off of back and forth in a way that we don't compete. Even if it's someone in our own area, Chick-fil-A, I'm inspired by their customer service, right? And there's other players in the industry. I'm inspired by something they do better than us. We have mutual respect. If there's anything off limits, you can say, you know, I can't really answer that one. But we go back and forth with each other and ask questions. So that's one aspect coming out of the Tech LX program. You really have these contacts, mentors, and peers.
Yes.
The other side of it, though, is really getting these high potential leaders to have the space and time to grow and learn, right? It's so easy to get sucked into the day-to-day, you know, giving them the time and then forcing them to actually take the time to do it and learn some of these things and talk about some of these concepts and ideas and move on.
Well, I mean, it just fits. I mean, just the core values of you, of Panera, you know, really taking care of your people, right? And growing your people. And so I want to just say publicly, thank you for being such a champion. You guys, like I said, were one of the very first companies to put your name in the hat. You guys have been amazing champions of the program. So thank you so much. And just like you guys, we're continuing to look at how we can make it better, John, just to what you'd said before. But this is called Something Extra. I have to ask, What is the something extra that you believe every leader needs?
We've covered a few of mine, right? The contagious mood of a leader. We've talked about resiliency. I really think one of the things that we've tried to do is build fantastic teams. And for me, building a new team is an exciting opportunity. And as you look at that team, there's always different hiring traditions. We do a one question interview type of thing, right? But finding talent. But once that talent's assembled on the team, how do you inspire them? And so I can remember, I'm going to do a couple examples. I can remember when I first came to Panera, the Panera IT team was pretty small. It was 90 people. We had to grow it to 300-400 pretty quickly. You know, we've peaked out at 500 at times. And you think about that, that's huge, right? But the Panera IT team that was here, very energetic, never given time to learn or become an expert in a technology. Mm-hmm. And young go-getters relentlessly solving problems. And we brought in some seasoned experts. And at the time, I came from MasterCard, and a lot of the seasoned experts in all the IT shops, you know, they might be the best Unix administrator, but they're getting to the point where they're going to retire in 5 to 10 years, and they don't see the next generation of engineers to turn it over to. SAN technology, database technology, all those type of things. And so when they first came in, it was this, they would ask the question, how did you think of doing it this way, right? And these new people would hear, what the hell were you thinking in that question? Seasoned people were asking, oh my God, how'd you pull this off? Right. And so it was getting them in a room and making them understand you guys are missing the mark on each other a little bit. And at the same time, the seasoned people, I need you to not put your hands on the keyboard and solve the problem quickly. I need you to teach someone else the why you do it this way and then let them do it. And we're going to have issues. We're going to make mistakes. That's okay. Again, we continue to come back and focus on why. And so it was this instilling this lifelong learning from each other. Everyone on the team has a skill that's better than anyone else. But I truly believe you can meet anyone, anywhere in the world and learn something from them and learn something from that experience. And so how do you teach each other and have curiosity and begin with that curiosity? Whether it's mutual respect, learning how to give feedback, right? Giving feedback, it's a two-step process for us. What I appreciate is the fact that I'm wearing a blue shirt today. However, it could be better if it was ironed, that type of thing, right? So,
right, so yes.
You give it a two-step process and you disarm people around it with kindness and really recognizing the value it brings. But here's how we could make it better, right? And so you diffuse that, not so that you try and take people's defensiveness out of it, and we're trying to work together. So it's teaching, learning, curiosity. That's really how we build these great teams. And they've done amazing things, right? I cannot, you know, we talked about CIO awards. I cannot tell you, it is the teams that accomplish tremendous things in timeframes that, quite frankly, impress me, beat my expectations, which is an amazing thing as a CIO to say.
Oh, wow. So good. Well, I love what you just said about the two-part question or the two-part feedback, because, you know, a couple of things, John, that it just strikes me. You know, number one, you're caring for the person, you know, you're maintaining their dignity, but, you know, it is a continuous learning environment there. So just as an individual, there are great things that you're doing these great things, but how can we, here may be an area over here that we can improve on.
We can always improve. Yeah.
You can
no matter what I do, I can improve, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, you know, I think one of the things that you do, and you didn't say this because you wouldn't say this about yourself, but I think one of the things that you do really well, John, is you model humility. You know, you do model humility, and to be able to receive feedback, you have to have some humility about
that's
you.
Right.
That's right. So, but you're modeling that for your people.
You have to own that moment a little bit of feedback, right? You have to,
that's
yes,
right.
I own that feedback.
Yes. And so good.
Feedback's always a gift as well.
This has been so much fun. I have absolutely loved our time together. I know that your stories and your leadership journey and all the wisdom that you've shared today, I know it's going to help our listeners. So I just appreciate you so much being on the show. I appreciate your partnership. Technology Partners loves Panera. Our team loves working with you guys.
It's a great work together. Yeah. Yeah. And Lisa, we appreciate you doing these podcasts. We all get so much out of it. Before we started, I thank you for not having me follow some of your best guests. You have some amazing podcasts out there.
Yeah. See, there's your humility.
Truly things I take away.
Again, John, because I think you are amazing. You're like a top leader in my book. So I just appreciate you making the time. So thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day, my friend.
Thank you, Lisa. You too.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.